This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
Hello and welcome to LabCast. I'm Kevin Kane, and today I'm once again turning over the program to my colleague Firas Raouf, one of our venture partners here at OpenView. Firas and I have been working on a new ebook about how to build high-performance boards of directors, which will be coming out later this winter. As part of that exercise, Firas decided to speak with Pascal Levinson, managing partner at Levinson Venture Partners. Pascal has deep insights into boards of directors and how they work. In this second podcast in a two-part series, they will be discussing how to run successful board meetings. Let's go ahead and listen in on their conversation.
Well, Pascal, thank you for joining me for this second part of our discussion about board of directors in early stage companies. I'd love to sort of focus now on the actual board meetings themselves and some best practices around that. You've seen all kinds of board meetings in all kinds of companies, venture-backed and not big or small. I guess in particular for our audience, which tends to be an early stage CEO and board member, what is sort of your experiences in the best way to run a very successful board meeting?
First, I'd say that the most important thing is to have an agenda that you actually observe. And I'm a fan of the three-hour board meeting with reserving an additional hour for slippage and also for non-official board meeting discussion. But the formal part of the board meeting should be 3 hours. And I think it's absolutely critical that you have an agenda that is pre-discussed and that everyone understands that there's going to be, say, a focal point for the meeting, right? Typically, away from strategy sessions when you're doing the annual operating plan, it's really nice to have a thematic board meeting, and everyone will know ahead of time, like, oh, we're talking about international this time, or we're talking about deep technology roadmap this time. And so that way you also get to feature different members of your team, and they come in and make a special presentation, and it's a great way to get them exposure to your board and vice versa. And it's also just a great way to make sure that people understand why they're showing up at the board meeting, as opposed to, you know, here we go, we're going to just get drowned by a bunch of slides and there's no purpose.
And what would you say is the CEO's responsibility before, during, and after the meeting to result in a successful board meeting?
Prior to the meeting, it's to set the agenda in a timely manner and deliver the presentation materials, ideally 3 days before the meeting. Everyone's happy if it's 48 hours before. Nobody's happy when it's an 8 a.m. board meeting start and you get the slides at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I have to say, I still get that from people. And it's just not right. It's disrespectful to the board, and it makes it impossible for you to show up prepared.
But it's full 6 hours before the board meeting, right? You just
exactly.
Have to be sleeping.
Yeah, that's right. Who needs to sleep?
Right.
Then during the board meeting, the CEO should be timekeeper, and also, you know, making sure that everyone gets participation time from the team, and just really sticking to the agenda. And then after the board meeting, it's following up and making sure that people felt that it was a successful meeting. I think the other key thing during the board meeting, and I would say this is at the end of the board meeting, is that there should be an action list so that everybody knows that they got an assignment. I think that if the CEO doesn't have some follow-up assignment for every director at the end of every board meeting, the CEO is underutilizing their board.
That's a great point. So speaking of the other board members then, you know, what are their responsibilities before, during, and after the meeting?
Well, I'll start with some key general responsibilities. First is to serve as a fiduciary for all shareholders, which means keep in mind the impact on all different constituencies of actions taken by the board. The most important responsibility is to hire and fire the CEO and also to ratify officer selection. Another important duty is to seek continuity and strengthening the board, right? So again, make the board better. Reviewing and confirming the basic company objectives and business strategy. That means approving the operating plan. And then, of course, the key, oversight, right? And this is from the regulatory perspective and from the legal perspective, oversight, showing due inquiry, showing that you actually ask the questions, inquiring into performance deficiencies. This is critical for the director.
And what have you seen as sort of some of the poor practices of board members and how to tackle them, whether it's missing meetings or not being prepared or not fully engaged? What are the best, what would be your advice to CEOs on how to handle situations like that?
Right. Well, so I'll quickly list some poor director practices and then some poor board practices. A bad director feels compelled to speak even when they have nothing to say. Also will become disengaged because there have been disagreements and they don't feel like people are listening to them. They'll fail to resolve disagreements quickly and constructively. And then, as you said, not maintaining regular board meeting attendance. Then something that's really problematic is inconsistency between behavior at the meeting and behavior after the meeting. It's like being passive-aggressive and saying yes, yes, when you mean no, no. I'd say another thing to worry about is smaller investors who are directors who don't express their opinions because they are afraid to show disagreement or independence from the lead investor. I think that's a real problem. At a board level, the biggest problem is this failure to communicate, which is directors are not maintaining dialogue in or out of the boardroom. And, you know, sadly, I get brought into situations that have become dysfunctional to try and rebuild communication. I've done that on a number of occasions. Failing to reconcile diverging viewpoints. So, you know, people are saying, oh, yes, reasonable people could disagree on this, but you cannot just continue to disagree because you're preventing the company from moving forward. And the corollary to that is avoiding conflict, right? It's like it is okay to have constructive conflict, but you have to resolve it. Another would be these excessively long board meetings, which is just poor meeting management.
I suppose one of the one of the issues that come up is with investor board members, whether there's one who has a significant influence and exerts it, or multiple investor board members where there's misalignment in priorities. You know, what are some of the, what would be the advice that you'd give on how to manage investor board members?
Well, I think the first thing, and I think this is an important point that you make, the first thing is to actually get the misalignments out on the table, right? So, because sometimes people will be behaving at odds with each other, but they haven't actually expressed why. And so that means showing a transparent analysis of the capitalization table is a really good idea. Because then, you know, the disagreement could be, well, yeah, I make money at this price, whereas you lose money at that price. So therefore, I'm going to behave differently. And, you know, the way to deal with this that I've seen that's effective is separating the role of the director from the role of the shareholder. And the way I've seen funds handle this is to have the director partner behave as a fiduciary and act in the best interests of the company and all of the shareholders, and then have a separate decision made by a different partner who is representing the shareholder interest. This is why it's important to have independent directors around the table.
Well, and I, you know, and for the investor board members who are listening to this, and part of their fiduciary responsibility is to represent the shareholders first and their investment funds second, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. And so that the challenge for investor board members is to really take off the investor hat when they're in the board meeting and be very explicit about when they're wearing that hat, when there are specific investment-related questions that are being brought up.
Yes, agreed. I think that's a very good point.
Right. Now, and I suppose that's where the role of the chairman really comes in, and so that's where the benefit of separating the chairman from the CEO persona and having the chairman be an independent board member.
Yes. Yes. Although, again, with most venture-backed companies, that's not likely to happen because often the independent director just doesn't have enough sway or doesn't work closely enough with the CEO. So, again, it has to be someone who understands their role and can, you know, draw the distinctions.
It's interesting. At OpenView, our philosophy has been that it's better to give up some control, i.e., in having an independent be a chairman, rather than have to deal with an ineffective board because of an imbalance between the board members and lack of cohesion.
Absolutely. I agree with that completely. And, you know, there's one board that I'm on where the chairman is an independent. He's done a terrific job, and he is an industry icon. And so that's great. Having said that, he also does have an investment in the company. So and it's not small, but it's significantly smaller than the institutional investors, right? So, you know, it's a matter of degree, and ultimately it's about the personalities of the people around the table.
Great. Well, Pascal, this has been very, very insightful. I really appreciate the time that you spent with us here.
Thank you, Firas. I really enjoyed it, and look forward to more discussions in the future.